And when I found out this, I thought, oh, this is just too awful for words. I can't appreciate in somebody else's shoes, no permission or anything like that. And he happened to be staying three doors away from where I was staying. And I phoned him through. When did we arrive? Was it Friday morning?
Thursday.
I think I phoned him the Friday morning. And I said, I must come over and see you just for a couple of minutes. And I went over to him and I said, now, this is just a... And he was taking part in the wedding. He was assisting me. I said, now, this is absolutely wrong. I want you to officiate and I will assist you. It's your synagogue. He said, oh, no, I insist that you did and I'm going to assist you. That is the way I want it. Because there was a certain relationship between me and the chosen. It was between him and the chosen. He would have felt that I had more share in him than he did and insisted on that. So that is the way he did it. But then, and his reception was in the hall of the same synagogue. They have a social hall, you see, the same as we are going to have. They have it already. They also had a very wealthy man who gave them the money for it. So, the next thing though, I was arranging the wedding. And so I appreciated the wedding, I don't want it to be a mess. And in New York, I'm sorry, Esther, do you come from New York? Are you really attached to New York?
Family.
You have to excuse me for what I'm about to say. Now, in New York, a wedding is a mess. And that is the norm. That's the way it's got to be, you see? So, I said to God, offended people. I said, now, I appreciated the wedding. I don't want it to be a mess. They said, well, you can't have it any other way. That's the way it's got to be. So, I said, it's surely not if I'm going to officiate. They said, oh, no, it's got to be that way. So I said, all right, let's try and make a compromise on it. Half a mess, half not a mess. So, anyway, we got together, and as we were going along, I said, now, after the chuppah, the couple go into yichud. Yes, of course. Is that a mess? I said, oh, no. The mess doesn't start yet. they go to the chuppah. I said, now, immediately after the yichud, they come in and they join the guests, and the guests don't start eating until they come. They said, oh, no, that's a mess. So I said, no, you can't have that. It's got to be that way. Anyway, after a lot of arguing, and I'm not a very good person at arguing, they agreed. On Sunday morning, I got a frantic call from one of the interviewers. And he said, I wasn't present when we had this meeting, but you just can't do that. That's not the way it's done here. So I said, very simply, I've got to take the photographs first. That is a ritual. I said, you're not telling me to be? I said, no, of course not. But, okay. I said, now, I've got a wonderful idea. They come in, they have the first course, and then they go out and have the photographs. I said, no, you can't do that. I said, but why not? They said, that people will be confused. Confused over that? I mean, what kind of mind would be over that? Anyway, by this time the chosen was also in it, and they assured me, they said, now look here, all it will take will be 20 minutes. 20 minutes after the year, that's the most it will take. It will take a real seat to it. I said, you know, you will not see to it. Don't be so, it won't work out like that. Don't you understand that the photographer regards the taking of the photographs far more important than the chuppah and the kiddushin? That is the wedding as far as he's concerned. And if the photographs aren't there in full, means they're not properly married. You've got to. No, they will do it. I said to him, I'm going to tell you a story. Perhaps this will convince you. Yunus-Yunini photographers. And that's the story. So the story is actually the true story. In the olden days, they were Magidim. Now, I still had the tail end of the Magidim. The Magidim were itinerant preachers. And they were wonderful preachers. And they went from town to town, and that's the way they made their living. They were paid in half a living. And they preached to the congregation, but they gave the most wonderful sermons. I still heard an itinerant preacher in London when I came there. And there was the famous Kelmer Market, he afterwards became the Kelmer Market. And they used to travel, these Magidi used to travel from town to town. You must understand, there were no aeroplanes in those days. There were no motor cars in those days. And a carriage was too important, too expensive. So they used to get onto a donkey and they used to go from place to place. So the Kelmer Magid was in Kroos and he wanted to go to Kelm. So, I suppose it's about as far from Kroos to Saratoga or something like that. Maybe a little bit further. He wants to get onto the donkey and the donkey won't let him get off. He said, "Donkey, I have to go to Kelm." This donkey, no, won't let him go off. He said, "So I started reasoning with the donkey. I said, donkey, donkey, all I'm asking is, let me get onto your back and take me just to the next corner. That's all." The donkey, what do you do? So I got onto the donkey's back, and as soon as I got onto the donkey's back, I said, "Donkey, donkey, now, I'm sorry, I missed that part, just too far." So eventually he got to Kelm, and he came to Kelm, and Kelm is one of those towns, it's a highly sophisticated town, and they said, "You don't want an itinerant preacher. Don't want to listen to you." He said, "To sit and listen for 2 hours, we can't do it. You don't want it." He said, "I heard this before." They said, "Not even an hour we were prepared." He said, "A half hour? Not even half an hour. We don't want it." He said, "I'll tell you what, I'll make the bulk of it. All I will speak for is 3 minutes. Take out your watches. 3 minutes, that's all." Well, they looked at one another, 3 minutes after all. "Three, what? You can speak 3 minutes." So he got onto the bed and then he started by telling them the story about the donkey donkey. And he said, "Eventually, the donkey donkey just in the corner." That the donkey agreed. I got onto the donkey's back, and as soon as I got onto the back, I said, "Donkey donkey, now I am in the saddle. And you will take me to Kelm." You see, I am now on the bina, and I am speaking. So I will speak as long as it is necessary. He spoke so well that they appointed him as the permanent preacher for Kelm, and he became known as the Kelmer Magid after that. So I told him that story. I said, "Look here. The photographer will promise you," and he told me that they had already promised, the photographer promised that he'd own 10 minutes, that's all he needed for. I said, "It'll be donkey donkey, I'm in the saddle." You'll see what will happen. Anyway, he went into the hall, 20 minutes passed, and the people had said to already, "See, it's New York, it really has to be a mess." And it was really getting full. You know, eventually they came in. How long did it take? About an hour.
At least.
An hour, you see. They came here. Well,
then the music started, and that went on without a stop.
Yeah, all right.
Before it was Jenny Peoples
now. Well, that's right.
So by the time the bride and groom came to the table, we'd already got to about the third course.
You see, so it was a mess. Anyway, the chosen came up and sat down, and of course I was very polite and courteous, and I wouldn't say anything. And he said, "The love, as always, was right." They think that that is the most important part of the wedding. Right? You can't get away from it. That's a photography, you see. Now, Ruth wanted to make an announcement. She had asked me before, do I make the announcement? Can I make an announcement? I said, certainly. As soon as we started, he said, wants to make the announcement. He said, can I make the announcement? I said, no, not before this year, at the end of this year. I was afraid that you'd get the idea that the announcement is more important than the year. It's like the photography. So that is why it is. Yes. It's for the end of the year.
That's fine. I'm sure.
It's another thing I wanted to tell you. Another thing I wanted to say to you, and that is usually when I've been away for a couple of weeks, I find it difficult to get back into my stride again, and I always ask you for your assistance. But I must tell you, and I don't want this to go outside of this shield, it might cause some trouble. I just want to tell you that the easiest shield for me to get back into my stride is this shield. And because you always help me and you're responsive, you ask questions, you're alive, and then I get back very quickly. So please don't let me down today. Now, before we begin this shiur, are there any questions or any remarks anyone wants to make with regard to the shiur? I decided to sit without my jacket today. I'm very, very comfortable in this, what is called a sweater here, because it's not acrylic, but it is what they call lamb's wool. Yeah. And it is so very comfortable and warm. It's not tight, it's so very comfortable and warm that I've permitted myself to luxury for tonight. So please excuse me. Now, are there any questions you'd like, remarks, observations you'd like to make before this year? So just to fit us as a sort of warming up exercise, we've done quite a lot of Derech Hashem. I make it that we are on page 82. Now, I want to tell you that it's these 80 pages. It's quite a fair share of it, and we are rapidly coming towards the end of the first part. The first part is only a little bit further. On page 86 is already the end of the first part. And the first part is not in it. Now, what I want to know from you, whether, in your opinion, this has been a worthwhile and profitable exercise. Any remarks on that? Very much. Yes.
I would like to see it continue. I would like to see it finished to go back to where we were.
You want to get over it again?
You have to go back to this normal. Yes, you left me.
Yes, you know, Torah is so, there are so many departments in Torah. I don't know if I've ever done this with you, but I worked out that there were 10 different departments of Torah. And this is just one of the departments of Torah. And this is, one department is known as Kabbalah, another is Musar, another is Makshava, another is Drush, and this is in between the Kabbalah, Musar, and Makshava. It's just in between. And it's the way it's done, it's, I'm very partial to anything that the Meshachan and Sater has written. Any other remarks, observations?
Yes. I really agree with them. Bobby, I was just trying to phrase what she phrased very well. Difficult,
yes.
But it's certainly an aspect of Torah that we don't get in all the other books that we had so far. Yes. It's interesting.
Well, I tell you what some women in Los Angeles told me. First of all, they tell me that it was terribly, terribly difficult. And I can't understand why it should be so difficult. And they explained to me, because they had never been trained to think about these problems and along these lines. And that is why they found it so very difficult. But they're getting into it very nicely. Another thing they told me, that was on the difficult side, another thing they told me, that what they found was so important, is that some women, not one woman, but some women said to me, they cannot understand how they could have got on with their lives without knowing these principles. That they were so fundamental, that is what they felt about them, and I thought that was a very good remark. Because going back many years, when I first started on the Derech Hashem, I remember that is exactly the way I felt about it. That when I met Ricardo Pagamansky for the first time, and he just spoke to me, and he said to me, have you got any problems? And I said, yes, I've got some very great problems. He said, all right, I'll tell you what. We were actually at the seaside resort in Valanga. After shul tomorrow, we'll sit down and speak a bit, and afterwards you'll come and have breakfast with me. So we did that, and he tackled these problems, and they were problems that were cropping up in the Derech Hashem. And afterwards, when I started the Derech Hashem, it all became very clear to me. So I think that is an important aspect of it, and that is something that is very, very worthwhile. Any other statements, remarks, observations? Yes?
In the way that this content seems to me something that almost, if we had a shiur every day, it might be easier to, that we're just doing this once a week with like Malachi or the other text, we know the story, we can follow that. But this is a very, I find it difficult, and I find it, once we get into it and warm up, it becomes so, it suddenly clicks and enjoy it. And then the next week, it seems like we have to get back into it. And after 6 weeks, which is a much longer than the first, even more than 18 weeks, because it's more than a break of the story, it's just a whole break. I find it difficult to get back, and I feel that if we were to get back into it, if we could warm up it. At this moment, I feel very cold.
Good. All right, then we've got to get that. Yeah. We've just got to get that right. And we'll try and do it. And the way I propose doing it this evening is taking something that we have done already and just enlarging on it and seeing that we're able to get back into it, you see. All right, from there we can go on. Esther, you came into it when we were already in the middle, very much in the middle, deep into it. How did you adapt to it?
Well, initially, it was quite hard. Very hard to see who was even willing to begin this sort of thing alone. This is not kind of accepted. Sometimes I think I would tell people in New York.
No, but you see, this isn't really, this is very light Kabbalah. Yes, it's more machshava than Kabbalah, you see. And it goes so well with Mesillas Yeshurim to such an extent that my wife feels that I should have started with Mesillas Yeshurim and not this. That's the very specific thing.
Yes, that we should have done Mesillas Yeshurim first.
That Mesillas Yeshurim should have been done first, and that is correct, there's no question about it. The only thing is that I thought that the Mesillas Yeshurim is something that you do on your own. But I'm probably wrong on that. It is, of course it is, yes. Of course it is. This is much more accessible.
Yes.
Well, which is, of course it is. Perhaps I should have done that first. I just, to me, it's so simple. But I don't realize that that there's so much I could do with the Mesillas Yeshurim in spite of its simplicity. But anyway, let us sort of go on from here. Now, I am taking very careful note of what Jordana said, And as she was speaking, I knew exactly what she was saying. What I propose doing is doing it in a way where, when I prepare a shiur of Derech Hashem, that the shiur is on a theme. And that is the theme, which I tell you before I start the shiur, this is the theme, and then I will continue to take that subject in the theme. And let us give you an example of it tonight. There is a point that is made. There is a point that is made in the previous chapter, which I feel was a very important one. And that is that the Messiah of the Derech Hashem, and he speaks about it in the Messiah's Yeshurim also, he speaks about what we call Kibbas Elokim, that is being near to Hashem. And being near to Hashem is a very privileged situation, and it is a state of mind and a state of being which brings considerable happiness to the one who is experiencing it. Being close to Hashem. And of course, the question is, how does one become close to Hashem? And if you will remember, the Derech Hashem said that the way one becomes close to Hashem, the most effective way to become close to Hashem is the study of the Torah. Now, prayer is also an effective way of coming close to Hashem. But with prayer, you very often feel that you are just not in the correct frame of mind for prayer, that you need something to prepare you for prayer also. But when it comes to Torah, you can get into Torah almost immediately. So, to get close to Hashem, now, for example, he says, yeah, don't worry about looking it up. He says that there are, it's love and fear of the Creator that can bring us close to Hashem. Question is, how do you get to the love and fear of Hashem? So he says that it is the Eirehemo and Tzom Chazoki. Love and fear of Hashem are means which lightens up the dark places of man's mind and soul and gives him the opportunity to come near to Hashem. Question is, how do we get to love of Hashem and fear of Hashem? And there he says, there is one instrument which Hashem gave us, which is greater than all the other means that Hashem has given us to come near to Him. And he says, the who Talmud HaTorah, and that is the study of the Torah. Now, just an example. You remember when we did this part? You remember? Now, just let us take that for a moment. And then he says, this is a greater means, a greater instrument than all the other instruments that bring a man close to Hashem, that bring a person close to Hashem. So there must be very many means that bring a person close to Hashem. And this is the greatest. So before we go any further, let us discuss for a few moments, not forgetting what our subject is. Our subject is Kirbas Elohim, coming near to God. In the Sira Shishorim, when the Sira Shishorim speaks about it, he quotes a verse in Psalms, Kirbas Elohim Li Tov, where David HaMelech says, being close to Hashem, Li Tov, that is goodness for me. That is the way he just puts it. Just in four simple words. Now, what are the means that bring a person close to Hashem? Now, I'm going to give you personal experiences. On Shabbos morning, Shabbos afternoon, we were walking to shul. It was raining. Walking in the rain. And it suddenly gripped me what rain was, what it all was. Here comes the rain, so refreshing, but what does it do? It provides grace. What does it mean? There's food for the animals, food for the human beings. And Dr. Bodlack is busy explaining to me things, tells me the moon has no atmosphere. It's too small, it hasn't got the gravitational force of it. Planets, there are very few planets that have got any atmosphere. And this, that they found this new planet, what was so important that they found one of the moons, and on the moons there was, one of the moons was atmosphere, evidently it was so big it could retain it. But normally speaking, as far as we know, in the rest of the world, there isn't that atmosphere and that water that there is here upon Earth. So, to all intents and purposes, that there should be life anywhere else in the universe is remote. Certainly there's no life anywhere else in the solar system. And the solar system is pretty big. No life, and that is where one would expect it. One of all the other planets, some kind of life, nothing. It's only on Earth. And what it is, this rain. And I couldn't help thinking of the famous Alabama, where the famous Alabama says, that which man needs most is most critical. What does a person need most? Air. That is most critical. Next, what does a person need? Water. Not as plentiful as air. It's there. After that, what does a person need? Food. Not as plentiful as water, more difficult to capture than water, but it is there. Afterwards, what does people need? You need gold, not as plentiful as any of the other things. All with everything that one needs, the availability of it is in proportion to the need the human being has for it. I thought to myself, and I was walking to shul, and all this was going, walking to shul. Can this all be by chance? Is it only by chance that all this happens? And that already was a means of coming close to Hashem. And that is what Hashem does. And I am the recipient of all this. That is one of the means that brings one close to Hashem. Just can't miss it. Now, apropos of that, I just want to tell you that when I was in South Africa, we met some of our old friends who had a son and daughter-in-law and grandchildren living in America, and the father was telling me how this young man had been trying desperately to get hold of me in America. He phones me from time to time, but the last few months of the time he's been unable to get hold of me, and he said he just has to speak to me and he told me some of his problems. He's a professor at one of the universities in Ohio. So a few days ago I phoned him and he started telling me some of his problems. We were discussing them, and then it came to the problem of the children. Now, he was living in the East, and he had his children in a yeshiva school. No, and he said, now they came to this town in Ohio. He said that they are the Jewish area. He said that the Jews are not Orthodox Jews, and they've sent the children to a government school. This was supposed to be a top government school. So I said to him, I said, why would you send them to a yeshiva school? They said, well, we've had such bad experience before. The teaching wasn't up to standard. They were unqualified teachers. So we were just too happy to take them out and put them into a school where the teachers are qualified for all this. But something else has happened. So this young man is a professor at the university, says to me, I have no idea what secularism was. And this is only through September. Since September, they started school in September. He said, I had no idea what secularism was until my children started going there. And I saw the effect it was having on them. No God. That doesn't exist. No creationism. That doesn't exist. It's evolution. And then the permissiveness, what they teach them. These are children, and they teach them how to act sexually, boys and girls. That is what they're teaching them already. And they said it's made such inroads into their lives. Now, that is something that furthers one. It is the exact reverse of Kilbas Hashem. It furthers one from it. Here we've got just walking in the street, in the rain, experiencing it and thinking about it, and that is something that brings one close to Hashem. And so I mean, if one thinks of the vastness of the universe and one thinks of the size of the human being, just the opposite of the vastness, just the size, how small everything is, the wonders that they are, all these things bring one close to Hashem. And yet, says the Derech Hashem, there is nothing that brings one as close to Hashem as does the study of the Torah. So if it's the study of the Torah that brings one close to Hashem, that is something that we must try and understand. Now I remember when I was doing this with you before we went away, that I told you that when I was very young, I liked Hendrik van Loo's books, and he wrote a book on art, and then he wrote a book on Rembrandt. And I read this book, and I was very interested in it. And I thought one day, when I get the chance, I want to see some of Rembrandt's original paintings. And so it was, we were in Amsterdam, and we went to see Rembrandt's home. And we became closer and closer to him, but nothing brought us so close as looking at his pictures. Just standing in front of his picture and absorbing it and just looking at that picture and seeing what he did with the canvas, seeing what he was conveying, what that did. Much more than being in his home. And this is where he lived. The pictures gave us much great need. Much more a closeness to Rembrandt than did anything else. That was his creation. Now, the greatest creation of Hashem is not the universe. The greatest creation of Hashem is the Torah. And that is what he has given us. And this is his word. And this is Torah min haShamayim. So he says, that is what brings us closest to Hashem. So if we are seeking Kilvas Elohim, then nothing will bring us so close to Hashem as the Torah itself. The next thing we've got to discuss is Torah. There are so many different aspects of Torah. So which part of the Torah will bring us closer to Hashem than any other part? Now that which is the word of Hashem, exactly as it was given, exactly as it was spoken, exactly as it was heard, was the Chumash. So there is the greatest. There we've got it. And that is why I'm so delighted with that shiur that Sima is conducting, where those who come to it are learning Chumash. That is what brings one closer than anything else. Now, the Derech Hashem makes a very strange remark then. Then he says, the study of the Torah falls into two parts. He says the first part is Ahi Goyon V'Halimu. The first part is the very simple pronouncing the words and understanding the Torah. Just the simple, just understanding the meaning of the words. He says that is the first type of study of the Torah. Now that is something that we are all capable of. The important thing is that it must be in the original. It must be in Lashon HaKodesh. Now it's all very well to read the Torah in English, to read the Bible in English, to read the Tanakh in English, all very well. But it's not the same as sitting down and articulating and pronouncing every word and pronouncing it correctly. That is worth everything. I don't understand every word. Try and understand. But do every word. Now you've seen it. In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. And you understand that. That is the first method of studying Torah. And that is what he says on page 70. In the English, I just want to see. Such study accomplishes this in two ways. First, through the reading of the Torah. He just says the reading of the Torah. Actually, in the original, it's got Ahi Goyon V'Halimu, pronouncing the word and the study of the words, just to understand it. Now, it was last Friday night at Shul that I was explaining this. Even if one doesn't understand it, that the value of just saying the words of the Torah. Now, you know, there is something very strange about saying things even if we don't understand it. I knew people who knew the whole book of Psalms by heart, but they didn't know, couldn't translate a single verse, didn't know what it meant. But every day of their lives, they would recite at least one psalm, some two, some three, some four. And they knew that all the book of the whole book of Psalms. Didn't understand. Just by reciting it over and over again. And they would never make a mistake. Can't get them anywhere, never make a mistake. Now, the way I explained it last Friday night was as follows. And there were two of you who were present then, so you will forgive me for repeating it. Or three. Another thing that brings me close to Hashem, and it's one that the Derech Hashem says, of all the ways that one can become close to Hashem, Torah is the most effective. Of all the ways. What are all the ways? So I've given you really a couple, I've given you the example of the rain. Now, and I'm always filled with wonder when I think about these things. And it pains me that children are born into the world today with no idea of what it is that we have got. Let us go back to the olden days. Take back a few hundred years. One came into one's home in the night. It was dark. It was before the days of matches. How could you make a fire? Rubbing two stones together. Then there was, with the flint, specially arranged stones so it went quicker. But that's the only way you could get some fire. And then you light it light some splinters, some wood, from there make a fire. Is there any way you could do it? And you wouldn't have proper light in the house. And that developed to matches, to candles. Well away. But in advance, got matches and candles. You come into your house, don't have to take strings and rub them together. Just strike a match and you've got light and you've got a candle. And then lamps. Fill it with paraffin. Did I use the word paraffin here? Fill it with paraffin and you light the lamps. Now, I remember, and I can go back very early, I can remember things from before I was 3 years of age. And I remember we had candles and we had lamps. We didn't have electric light. And then electric light comes along. Just cut them and you put on the electric light. But still we had wood and coal for stone stores. Today, you've got electric stove, electric heating. Just look what it means. Look at the time one saves. You don't think about it. But make difficulty with it. In more civilized countries, you don't even have to go to the grocer, to the supermarket. You pick up the phone and you do your ordering. Look at the time it saves you and it sends to you. Look at the time it saves the telephone. You've got to go to another country, to another town, take a train. How long did it take you? The journey that we have just done, in my memory, it used to take 28 days. And not from here, from Southampton, down from England, 28 days. And then 21 days. And then 17 days. And then 14 days. And then 11 and a half days. That was then. Today, 10 hours, 11 hours. From London to Johannesburg, 10 or 11 hours, that's all it takes. You think it's an awfully long time. Just look at what we have. The world in which we are living today. Now, we come into a room, put on the electric lights. But it's gone before that. Beyond that, you don't even have to press the button. Today, you can come into the room, and as soon as you come in, the lights go on. And of course, you've got Shabbos, right? But you can come in and the lights go on. But they've gone further now, because we started complaining. What do we do on Shabbos? So they've made it different now. You can come into the room and you can say, lights on. And the lights go off. Advanced to such an extent. Now, imagine you take a person and he can only speak Chinese. He knows a little bit of Japanese. Doesn't know any English. And you bring him here and you want to say, well, it's dark. I think if you want to go get the lights on in this house, you go on and you say, lights on. He said, but what is it? He said, lights on. So he says, looks up. He said, that's it. Light. I. Light. Light. And we explain it to him. Eventually he can say, lights on. He said, but what does it mean? He said, doesn't matter what it means. I still have to teach you what it means. He said, doesn't matter what it means. Be happy you can say, lights on. Now, comes in, I say to him, sit down. He said, but it's dark here, he tells me, in Chinese. Then I say to him, now I told you what to say. He said, but I don't understand. Don't worry, I understand everything. Just say what I told you to say. He says, lights on and the lights go on. What has he done? He has said two words. He doesn't even understand what the two words mean. He had a person then foolish. And he says, Bereshis, Barora, Lakima, he says, Shemayim, Ba'isra'ol. He doesn't even understand what it means. Those words to have said those words. That is the very lowest form of Limud HaTorah, of the study of the Torah. Just said the words and that's what it leads to. What kind of effect can it have? He doesn't understand it. That's an effect. Has an effect not only on him, on anything round about him. A Chinaman who says, lights on. Lights go on, everybody enjoys it. By saying two words, which he doesn't know the meaning of the two words, he's had trouble in pronouncing it. But now he pronounces it correctly and the lights go on. So, I'm just giving you that to give you some understanding of what it is that he's saying. And he says, Vashniyo, and the second way, that is comprehending it, really understanding the Torah, what it means. Now, you know, wonders, we speak about wonders. To me, a rush is one of the wonders of the world. It is the key to the Torah. Now, we say that the Torah Shebaal Peh to the Torah Shebiksav is like the soul to the body. That without the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Torah Shebiksav is dead. It is the Torah Shebaal Peh that gives life to the Torah Shebiksav. Rashi is able to And this is something that we have got. What a wonderful thing it is. And that is for the comprehension of the Torah. That brings us close to God. That is the most effective means of bringing us close to God. It might be slower than walking in the rain. Might be slower than that. But it is more intense and it is more effective. Might take a little longer. More intense and more effective. So that gives us some idea of what Kivas Elokim is. Now when we do a sefer like Derech Hashem, Derech Hashem does all this for us. It's a study of the Torah. Not the same as learning the Torah with a piece of Rashi. It's not the same. But it's Torah Shebaal Peh, and it is highly effective. And when we combine this with the Torah Shebiksav, what it achieves and what it does. Now there is this famous midrash which the Mesillas Yesharim quotes, and that is that if one studies the Torah, and one studies it aloud, one says, lights on, thinking it is not enough. But one studies it alone, and one comprehends it, and one understands it, and one has the Rashi to help them, and one learns the Rashi aloud together with the text, and one says the text aloud, and the Rashi aloud, it has an effect on the world round about us. How can that be? The Chinaman comes in here. He says, lights on, he doesn't even know what it means. And he's got light. But everybody else in the room has also got light. Not only he. And that is my way of explaining this point to you. Now, arising out of that, I want to tell you something that I heard from one of the rabbis that were with me, just last Monday night a week ago when we were together. Very interesting thing. We've got several words in Rosh Hashanah Kodesh for Hebrew, and each one means something different from the other. For example, we've got Chochmah. Chochmah is wisdom. So one of the explanations for wisdom, I'm saying one of the explanations, because there is wisdom on different levels, and on each level it's a different explanation. So I'm taking it at its lowest. wisdom is the body of a particular knowledge of a particular subject. The body of knowledge of a particular subject, that is wisdom. Bino is understanding. Bino is knowing Dover Mitochdo. For example, a person can know anatomy very well, and he can know physiology, but he can't make a diagnosis. A diagnosis is knowing Dover Mitochdo. He's able to take the information and is able to put it together and say, well, this is a symptom, I see this symptom, and in the book it says that is this, so it must be this part of the body must be affected, and this is, if this happens, then this shows that this is what, and he makes a diagnosis. A lawyer knows his book, he knows the law. But the case that he's got is never the same as the law is. So he's got to be able to analyze it, to understand the law, a law out of the law, and to be able to put it together. And if you ask me a shayla, it very seldom happens that exactly what you ask me is in the Shulchan Aruch. But I've got to be able to put it together. In this case, the Shulchan Aruch says this, in another case he says that, in the third case he says that, this has got this similarity, that similarity. Put it together and you're able to come to a conclusion. And that is Bino, yes?
Oh, that's still Bino.
That is Bino.
Okay.
Yes, that is Mevin Dover Mitoch Dover. You can take your Chochmah, your knowledge, and from that knowledge you can make a deduction and understand it. That is Mevin Dover Mitoch Dover. Very good. And then there is Tvuno. And Tvuno is usually translated as a deeper understanding. Doesn't mean anything. Now, this person told me that he saw an edition of the Vilna Gaon in which he speaks about it. Now, you can forget that for a moment, and I just want to tell you something else apropos of this. I was brought up in a school which said, if you understand something, you must be able to explain it to another person so that the other person can also understand. If you can't do it, then it's an affront in your understanding. That is the way I was trained. So, I had to be articulate, and I had to be able to explain to another person what I understood so that he should be able to understand. Now, it's a very strict discipline. But there came a time in my training when I thought that wasn't altogether true. I felt that one could understand something and yet one couldn't explain it to another person. I'm quite sure that Einstein understood the theory of relativity very well, but I'm equally sure that he could never explain it to me. I would never be able to understand it. So is there a fault in Einstein or is there a fault in me? Surely there isn't a fault in Einstein. So the Kivuna Gaon says something most remarkable. He says, Chochmah is knowledge, putting it as its lens. Bino, Mavin, Dover, Mitoch Dover, understanding something, being able to compare it, coming to a conclusion, making a diagnosis. He says that all that, you've got to be able to explain it to another person. Tavuno is explaining it to another person, that which you understand so well, but explaining it to him in a way that he can understand it. It's possible I understand it very, very well, and I can explain it to another person, but he is not on the level that he can understand. Tavuno is explaining it to him that on his level, that he will be able to understand. So that is what I try to do with this piece of Derech Hashem, where he says, just by pronouncing the words and knowing the translation, that's all. what you can achieve. Gave you the example of the Chinaman lights on 7 feet of magnetic. Now, to me, it is the most wonderful thing that we've advanced so far in science that we can make use of science to understand these things. But if I can explain it to you, and for that I've got to use Teruno, I've got to be able to give it to you, to give you an example, that from the example you can understand it also. That is Teruno. And I knew that my training was that I've got to be able, if I understand that the test is, can I make somebody else understand it? That I understood. But what I didn't understand, that those who were training me, unbeknown to me, were training me not only in Beano, but were also training me in Beano. And that is, I've got to be able to get the other person to understand on his level. And in this field he may not be knowledgeable, and yet he's able to understand. And that is why I've given you that particular example. Now, an important thing in prayer, when you pray, pronounce the words. The idea is that when you pray, you can hear what it is you are saying. You can't do it with all the prayers, do it with some of the prayers. Start practicing it with the Shema. That is straight from the Torah. Shema Yisrael. Straight from the Torah. The Or Haftor, Esa Hashem Elokeiko, V'chol Nevo V'chol, V'chol Nafshecho, V'chol Me'edecho. Straight from the Torah. And those words you can say, and those words you understand what they mean. Simple words. Just the simple meaning of it. And that is the training. And of course, for the second degree, going deeper in it, Sima Shir, that's just too wonderful. What a beautiful chance we have for that. Now, the time is up, and that is as far as I am taking you this evening. The subject that we have done is Kirvas Elohim, coming close to Hashem. And the Derech Hashem says, of all the ways, so there are many ways in which one can come close to Hashem. And in order to come close to Hashem, just the awareness of it. And the Torah helps us make a brocha before everything that brings about the awareness of it, brings you close to Hashem. And then finally, the question of the study of the Torah itself. Good, we've got a few minutes if there are any questions or remarks you want to make. Right, Ruth, you want to make your announcement?
I just want to make sure that everybody received this invitation to the general annual meeting. You're invited to a Mechad semi-annual meeting, at the synagogue, Sunday, December the 10th, at 8 p.m. This is the day three. The agenda for the meeting will be as follows: committee reports, approval of updated annual budget, approval of expenditure for fundraising done in January of 1991, approval of general guidelines, relating to the building of the social hall, old and new business. So please be sure to come. This is really important. What's that? Then, I don't know. At the last board meeting. And notices have been going out. If you haven't got it yet, you should.
When is it taking place? December 10th. It's the time for it to arrive.
Oh, sure. Might just be sitting out this room. And it'll be up. It'll be up on the notice board. Be sure to come. Michael just wanted me to give this reminder. So, that's all.
All right. Try to remember that definition of to be. It's supposed to be no, yes? Yes, the rule is giving, explaining it. You understand it well. And you can explain it well to a person on your level. And you know that you will understand it. But to be able to explain it on level of that business, he must be able to understand.
Make a model of that Tatman Tribuna to me, the path which is the most.
Yes, but you see, you can't have Tribuna without Bino, and you can't have Bino without Chokhma. That's right. Chokhma is the basis. That means just the knowledge of it. Bino is already that you can apply. So you've got to have a special understanding to be able to apply it. And Tribuna is being able to explain to a person who hasn't got that knowledge and to be able to explain it to him.
I mean, I was wondering about, if Amuna put it in there, and Chokhmah, because Amuna is something that a person has and can't really explain that.
No, you see, Amuna is something different. Amuna is a needle. Amuna isn't Chokhmah. Chokhmah helps one for Amuna. But to get Emunah, you can have all the Chokhmah and you've got no Emunah. And for me, it's still difficult to understand a person who studied anatomy, physiology, medicine, and he studied science in the cell, and he studied physics. It's still strange to me that he doesn't understand that he hasn't got Emunah. But it's possible, because Emunah is a needle. It helps when you've got that knowledge, it helps one. But that is already a reader. A reader you can't explain to another person. It's a quality, a soul quality, a personality quality, a character quality. Now, there is a priest on Friday, and there is a priest. On Friday there's a bliss on Friday morning, and there's a bliss on Sunday morning. The bliss on Friday morning is in English alive. And there is a bliss on Sunday morning in San Jose. Now it's a big mitzvah to be at the bliss. And if you're going to be at the Jerusalem bliss, you can't be at this bliss.
Why not?
That's how you do it.
Traveling these days is so fast?
No.
Not even with the Concorde?
No, because you lose time.